HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 38, recorded Monday, October 23rd, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible template-based code generator for .NET. Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100 online at codesmithtools.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine, online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl talk about the latest technology for dealing with diabetes and include a short discussion on the basics.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin, and you're listening to Hansel Minutes. I'm here with Scott. Hey, Scott, how are you?
How's it going, sir?
This show is going to be a little different. This is like different month, isn't it?
Well, you got to mix things up. You got to try different things. We can always sit around and chat about stuff, but we've done a couple of interview shows recently. Why not try a little something different occasionally?
So this show is all about diabetes technology, which is a subject near and dear to your heart.
Right. Yeah. I'm a type 1 diabetic.
This is you've blogged about this quite a lot, and I know a lot of your readers may or may not be diabetic, but a lot of them know about this side of you because you blog so much about it. In fact, you've got some really good general layman's explanations of what diabetes is and how it happens and how it works and what you can do on your blog. Some great stuff.
Yeah, all of my diabetes category is at shrinkster.com/JCX. And that'll take you to a paged archive view with all of the different posts that I've done over the years about diabetes and diabetes technology.
But if for somebody who's just had cursory knowledge of it in passing, give us the elevator speech.
Okay, so the nutshell is I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I was diagnosed a couple of months before my 21st birthday. In the old days, they would have called that a juvenile diabetic, mm-hmm. but now they call it type 1. And this means that I don't produce any of my own insulin.
Okay.
And insulin is the stuff that picks up blood sugar. Well, this is kind of, again, a layman's, this is
right.
A little more complicated than this, but
delivers it to the cells.
Well, it delivers.
Right?
It's actually, technically, it's the key that unlocks the cells and allows the sugar to go into them.
Yeah.
So you eat a bunch of food, and no matter what you eat, whether you eat pure sugar or whether you eat gummy bears or apples, it all turns into glucose and gets digested and put into your bloodstream.
Yeah.
And that's a whole complicated process through the stomach and the gut and the...
And your brain, basically, glucose is brain fuel too, right?
Yeah, totally. It goes, that is what runs the brain, totally.
Yeah.
So it flows around in your blood sugar, in your blood as blood sugar. We call it BG or blood glucose. And then the insulin unlocks the cells and lets that sugar in. And you like to keep a certain balance of blood sugar. Too much sugar in your blood will, over the years, start to clog the tiny capillaries, the little tiny blood vessels that are in your feet, that are in your eyes. Mm. It'll start to wear down your kidneys and your liver, as those are kind of the filters of your body.
You sort of hear those stories about people going blind or losing limbs. That's the kind of stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah, diabetes is the number one cause of blindness in the U.S., at least. I'm not sure about worldwide, and the number one cause of amputations.
Yeah.
If you're diabetic for a very, very long time and you don't manage it well, things will definitely start falling off.
Mm.
Things will start falling off eventually.
And if you don't have enough blood sugar, what happens?
So if you have so too much blood sugar in your system is called hyperglycemia. Hyper meaning too much. Not enough means hypoglycemia. And then basically the brain starts to shut down because you're not getting enough fuel to it. This is when you see people getting shaky.
Shaky and dizzy and that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So diabetics who do not produce their own insulin, like myself, have to supplement. So I have to add insulin into my system. And as you eat, your blood sugar goes up. As you take insulin into your body, your blood sugar goes down. And you try to keep that altitude level just so. And that's why I always use this airplane analogy.
And it's the pancreas that creates insulin? Am I
so
right?
So it's a thing called the Isles of Langerhans, the little kind of cell in the pancreas that produces the insulin. And the presumption is, at least in my case and a lot of type 1's case, that it's an autoimmune disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually got the flu in, I think it was in November of 1994. And after the flu was over, my body had beaten up the flu and in the process had beaten up my pancreas.
Wow.
Everyone has different perspectives about how that works, but the general belief is that it's an overreactive immune system.
And so the type 1 could really happen to anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it really can. It can happen. I mean, type 1 can happen at age 30, or it can happen when you're 2 years old. More and more, unfortunately, we're seeing people over 20 getting it, which is really odd. There's definitely I don't know if it's more people being diagnosed or more people really literally getting it because something in the environment's changed, but it's definitely coming up more and more often.
So type 2, what is type 2 normally caused
by? So type 2 is often hereditary, but type 2 is actually so different from type 1 that it might as well be called a totally different disease.
Wow.
That they're both called diabetes is interesting.
Huh.
Type 1 doesn't produce enough insulin,
right.
While type 2 are actually resistant often to their own insulin. So it's almost as if they've produced so much over the years, they become resistant to it like they have become resistant to any drug. So then you might be let's say that a person is a 200-pound person, but for the large part of their life, they were maybe 150 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly they became 200 pounds, but their body is still producing the amount that would be normal for a 150-pound person.
Mm.
They might need a supplement. Or they got really big and was eating a lot of carbs more than is in a reasonable amount. Maybe they lose, carbo loaded in a major, major way.
Right.
Then the body just starts producing so much insulin.
I guess that's why the low carb diet has been very popular among type 2 diabetics.
Oh, yeah. Because going back to the airplane analogy, if you eat food, your blood sugar goes up. So let's say that your altitude raises. And if you take insulin, your altitude goes down. With food, if you eat something that is high in carbs, something that has what we call a high glycemic index, meaning that it hits you fast, that's kind of like pulling back on the airplane stick really quickly.
And I know a little bit about this. That's why I'm actually intelligent in my discussions this week. But that's why, the raw sugar, the refined flour, all that stuff that's like converts very quickly to energy is the worst stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For example, like white rice is worse than brown rice, right?
Yeah.
White bread is really bad for you.
Yeah.
A really simple example would be that an apple with the skin on it would hit you slightly slower than an apple without the skin.
Because right? Your body has to chew through all that and spend
right,
the energy to digest.
Fiber.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Slows it down, right?
Okay, so what? Let's talk about the technology available to diabetics. And first of all, I want to before we talk about the stuff that you're into, I had heard last year that somebody was perfecting or bringing to market an inhalable insulin. And this was supposed to be like the biggest thing in the world because if you're a diabetic like you are, you're pricking your finger, checking your blood sugar, you're shooting insulin with needles and, ow.
Yeah, so, totally.
So what's the status of inhalable insulin? I know that you're up on this.
Right. So as a type 1, I've spent the last 10 years giving myself shots. Some type 1s give themselves as few as one or two shots a day, which would be the equivalent of changing your altitude, once or twice a day. So
yeah.
Fly from New York to LA and then you're only allowed to touch the stick twice.
Yeah.
And you have to prick yourself to check you prick your finger to check your blood sugar. And then that's a small finger prick. It's a very, very small needle.
Mm-hmm.
And it heals very, very quickly. But when you give yourself a shot, you're usually using a 30 millimeter or micrometer. They call it a 30 gauge needle or a 31 gauge needle. A very, very small needle. Oh, it's a needle. Yeah. 9 millimeters long, 30 gauge needle, and you're injecting yourself into the fat, right? It's basically into your belly, into the back of your arm, into your thighs, and giving yourself what are called units of insulin.
Okay.
The more you want to have control, very precise control, you're going to give yourself more shots of smaller amounts more often.
Right.
So to be a really good diabetic, to be very much in control, you need to be giving yourself shots all the time. So inhalable insulin kind of promised to let people use it like an inhaler, like
right.
An asthma inhaler. They literally
yeah.
just suck it in.
Yep.
And then the inner lining of the lungs would do the absorption of the insulin. So you're basically inhaling a fine mist, an atomized mist of insulin.
Yeah.
It's good, but the problem with this is that it's plus or minus a unit. So, for example, if I went to Chipotle today and I had some tacos and I gave myself 5 units of insulin, that's how much I need, not 4, not 6.
Yeah.
4 would be too little, 6 would be too much.
Got it.
For me, inhalable insulin would have meant I really don't know until after it's done how well that was absorbed. It's a plus or minus because you just there's an error. For someone who's taking 10, 15 units of insulin in a meal, plus or minus 1 might not be much to them.
Hmm.
For someone who's taking 4 or 5 like me, that's 20% of that dose.
And it takes, and by the time you get to measure its effect, it might be too late. Is that the deal?
Exactly. So one of the things that's tricky about this, going back to the airplane analogy, is that when you prick your finger, you're really looking at your blood sugar 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And when you take insulin, you're affecting your blood sugar in about an hour.
Hmm.
So it would be as if you looked at the airplane, saw the altitude, but that was your altitude 15 minutes ago. You pushed on the stick, but the plane's not going to move for 30 minutes.
And insulin pumps.
Okay, so I use an insulin pump because rather than pricking myself with a needle 10 times a day or 20 or however many times I want to, I have a tube that's connected to a plastic cannula. It's basically a plastic needle that's into my stomach and then taped down with medical tape.
Hmm.
So I put that in every 3 days.
Hmm.
I've got this big long needle with this kind of launcher-looking plastic device that goes thwack and shoots the needle into my gut.
And just before the show, you did that, right?
Yeah, actually, just before we started the show, I changed my pump and refilled it. So I moved it from one part of my body to another because you don't want the insulin to be absorbed by one section of the fat in your body because it'll eventually break down. So it's a needle with a tube around it. You shoot the needle in, you pull the needle out, and it leaves the tube that it brought along for the ride with it.
Ow.
But this allows me to give myself insulin at a tenth of a unit resolution. So we were talking about doing a unit here, a unit there.
Mm.
I can give myself 1/10 of 1 unit, which
Fine
is something
control.
That's not possible. Not possible, but really, really difficult with a needle. So, and I can do this all day long. I only have to give myself this shot, this kind of dramatic entrance every 3 days. And then I can give myself ongoing background insulin. I can put it into buffet mode if I'm going to be at a buffet and snacking for a long period of time. Keeps track of all sorts of things. And I was on a pump about 5 years ago, actually. I went on my first date with my wife, which was the first week that I'd ever used the pump.
Hmm.
So who knows how it would have gone down if I'd had a lousy blood sugar week, right?
Now, when I first interviewed you for .NET Rocks, you told me about a little program that you had written on your iPod. Or not your iPod, iPad.
Palm Pilot. My Palm Pilot.
Oh, Palm
actually.
Pilot. Okay.
Yeah, it was called GlucoPilot.
Right.
I wrote that like September of 98, and it was, you know, the preeminent blood sugar management system for diabetics on a Palm Pilot. And it was basically done with the idea that, you know, your to-dos, your tasks, your contacts, your
reminders.
Calendar, and your blood sugar. It's all peers. They're all the same thing.
Yeah.
I sold it to a company, and they sold it to a company who sold it to a company, and now, unfortunately, it's not being maintained anymore. And one of these days, it's on my list to go and write a really awesome one on the iPack or, you know, one of the compact framework
Pocket
devices.
PC, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really good thing to bring up because this is an example of a device that had a bigger screen, more batteries, and a lot of memory.
Yeah.
So before when I had my insulin pump, it was just a delivery mechanism. A lot of people look at it and they think it's automatic. It handles everything for me. In this case, it just delivers insulin. It just has a screw drive that turns. The screw moves forward, pushes against the bottom of a syringe, and squirts insulin in. It's very... Very low-tech in that sense. It's very high-tech in the sense that it can never, ever break down. It's like we've got a million fail-safes and 1,000 checks a minute, you know. But it's pretty much just a fancy, you know, it's a fancy IV, but it's just done into the fat.
Huh.
Now, it doesn't have, in the old days, it didn't have a lot of information. So then a new pump came out. I could check my blood sugar by pricking my fingers. The value would show up on the blood sugar meter, and then it would be transmitted wirelessly to the pump. Because the pump knows how much insulin it's been giving me. The information it didn't have was what's my blood sugar now. And then it has a wizard where I can say, now that you know my blood sugar, because it came in wirelessly, and you know how much insulin you've been giving me because I've been setting it and you have a history, how much insulin should I take for this particular meal? I can describe the meal in carbs and it will make a suggestion. Mm. Now, I still have to close the loop. I still got to push the button, right? Because if they killed me by making the decision automatically, that would be bad. So I'm always the one who has to say and do it.
Yeah.
None of it's automatic. Now, what's amazing is that 6 days ago, I just got a new, what's called a continuous blood sugar meter. And this is another device that sits attached to me on the other side of the body. I put the pump on the one side and I put the meter
on one side, output on the other.
Exactly. Same kind of thing. It's got a tube that kind of goes into me with a big long needle and I, you know, shoot it in and then pull the needle out and the tube stays in. Mm. And it sips the interstitial fluid in the fat and generates a value. Hmm. And then I check my blood sugar by pricking my finger, and then it does a correlation. And it says, oh, well, I'm going to trust your blood sugar meter because this is the authoritative source, right? Blood sugar meters have been around for years and years. We trust them. Hmm. This is a new technology. We don't fully trust it.
Okay.
So we're going to calibrate it. So maybe it comes up with some number, right? Some arbitrary number that has nothing to do with blood sugar. And it's going to find a correlation. You know, when I think this number, your blood sugar must be this because historically. So actually right now, because I've just changed it, I'm in the middle of the warm-up period. So it's actually learning about me right now over the next 2 hours. And then once that warm-up period is done, I'm going to have a real-time graph, mostly real-time, every 5 minutes, of my blood sugar on the screen of my insulin pump.
That's so cool.
Freaking huge.
Yeah, that's great.
Just think
about
this, right? This is the difference between checking your altitude twice a day versus actually having an altimeter that changes.
Right.
To really push the airplane analogy, this is kind of like an artificial horizon. Hmm. I'm not actually going to use it to make really substantive decisions. I'm still going to trust the pricking of my finger because this is not sipping blood. It's just sipping some of that inner fluid that you have running around in your system.
Yeah.
But it's going to give me a trend line. It's going to give me valuable information about what's happened between this time and that time. When I hear about diabetics who check their blood sugar twice a day, I just like, how does that provide you any information at all?
Right.
Oh, it was 100 at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And now it's 3 in the afternoon. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
You know, our altitude was 1,000 feet over Ohio.
Yeah.
Totally useless information because there's such crazy stuff happening in between. This thing has already, I've had the best blood sugar of the last 3 days of my life.
Now, the best blood sugar means you've been in the most control of it, right?
Yeah, that's a very good point. When I mean the best blood sugar, I mean my blood sugar has been as close to normal than it has ever been.
Because you've been able to react to the readings in a timely manner. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, for example, sometimes I'll take a nap and my blood sugar will go high and I'll wake up and I'll feel like I've been marinating in my own juices. You know, and I'll sit there and I'll go, and you start beating yourself up. It's like, oh man, I've had high blood sugar for 4 hours. You know, this is horrible. Now this thing will actually beep when it notices the trend that I'm trending upwards. Mm. Right? It's kind of like that early alert, you know, the stall meter. You know, what is the stall thing on the airplane that says, you know, engine stalling, you need to handle something.
Now, do you think there will come a day when these two devices will combine?
Well, the word on the street, and I know this from a couple people who are working kind of internally, and I'm seeing more and more press releases because these companies put out these early press releases. But the word is that there's a hockey puck shaped device that is a total combination. Hmm. And this hockey puck gets basically implanted in your abdomen. So it would sit
inside
somewhere
your
around
body.
My liver. Inside your body. And it would have like a funnel in it, like a hole that funneled down, like kind of the way that an anteater's home looks like. It would kind of be a concave funnel. You take a big fat needle and stick it through your gut until it hits that kind of funnel, and then the meter would notice that you've entered in this giant needle, and it would start sucking insulin in. So you could actually refill yourself for like 6 months worth of insulin. Basically, it would draw in this stuff, so you could basically fill up at the pump, and then because it's inside,
like an artificial pancreas, kind of.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's the closest. It's like an artificial heart, artificial pancreas. It's going to be in there. Able to deliver insulin in a much quicker way. Right now, I'm injecting insulin into my fat, so it takes an hour to do anything. This is going to be right there in the middle where it's all happening, and it could release it right to where it's needed immediately.
Now, if they could get rid of that needle and replace it with a gas cap, you know, little screw-off thing.
You know, I saw this really awesome thing on the TLC. apparently, I didn't know this, but amputees, you know, they have the bone and then it goes down to a stump and there's really nothing between the bone and the stump. It's just kind of like flesh.
Yeah.
And then they have to put their leg on. So you've got, you know, bone from the hip going down your leg and then flesh and then you've got your leg.
Yeah.
But you've got this basically 2 inches of flesh that's really taken all the brunt. So there's this guy, I guess he's in Norway, who basically came up with a port, like a standard port that would actually stick out. It basically drills it into your bone, sticks out of your body, and you can have like interchangeable feet. And it's it's actually an extension of your bone. So then the little stump doesn't hurt so much.
Right.
But the big deal there was that the body really doesn't like stuff sticking out of it.
Right.
It doesn't like to have an entrance
into
the system.
Likes to be self-contained.
Yeah, and interestingly, the same thing applies with my pump, that if I keep it on for more than 3 or 4 days in one hole, basically, the system starts to reject. I mean, the body's like, I do not want that here. I'm going to start covering it with what are called microphages and try to expel it from the system.
Oh.
You know, you hear about people who get shot and then years and years later, the body finally pops the bullet out.
Yeah.
The body does not want stuff in it.
Yeah.
That is not as not natural, which actually brings us to transplants. Everyone says, well, why can't you have a transplant? Well, the theory is that anything that you transplant into me, I would end up killing the same way I killed my own stuff. So then you would basically have anti-rejection drugs to keep yourself from doing this. So then you can basically, you know, it's which evil do you want? Do you want to take insulin your whole life or take anti-rejection drugs? So somebody had the cool idea to take these cells, these little islet cells, and cover them in some kind of a, basically think of it as a cellular wiffle ball with holes in it that are small enough for insulin to get out of, but not big enough for antibodies to get in and beat it up.
Wow.
So you'd basically encompass these things in this mesh such that they'd be protected naturally and physically from your immune system.
That's ingenious.
Apparently there's like it's pretty cool. There's like 7 diabetics in Canada that are cured and they're eating ice cream all day long. And
oh, wow.
So, I mean, this is the thing with diabetes research. If you follow this, you know, no matter what it is, it'll be solved in 10 years.
Right, right.
You know, so 10 years from now, like, oh yeah, 10 more years and we'll have it handled.
Yeah.
So the attitude of most diabetics, especially ones that are into the techie stuff like me, is to stay in as good a control as possible for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Of course, I've been doing this now for 10 years. Until I can go and get that shot or that pill or that hockey puck implanted in me to make it all fixed.
Now, is there any evidence that if you are type 1 diabetes and you do have control of your blood sugar, that you're any more or less at risk for other diseases or shorter life or anything like that than if you didn't have it? I mean, can you live a completely normal and healthy long life as a type 1 diabetic if you stay in control of your blood sugar?
So there was a diabetes control thing called the DCC, I think it was called. Basically, the Diabetes Association got together and said, ask that question. If you stay in control, what's the difference? And apparently, if you do stay in tight control, which takes a partnership between you and your spouse and your doctor, I mean, it's complicated.
Yeah.
But if you can pull it off, if you can become at least normal or high normal, your chances of kidney disease drop, your heart disease drops. I have a diabetic friend who's been diabetic 50 years.
Wow.
Literally 50 years. So even though most diabetics do die of diabetes, it is absolutely feasible and there are many. You actually get interestingly, Eli Lilly, the people who invented insulin in 1922, will give you a certificate if you make it 50 years on insulin. And there's a bunch of people who have in fact made that happen. So yes, you can survive 40, 50 years. So it's conceivable, and certainly the technology is going to get better. I mean, my buddy who did it for 50 years, did it by, you know, boiling needles on his stove and reusing them, you know.
Wow.
When you couldn't prick your finger and check your blood sugar, you had to pee on a stick.
Right.
And the stick would turn color, and then you'd hold the stick up to this, and it looks kind of blue, it looks kind of purple. I mean, it was very dark ages.
Right.
I mean, here I am, you know, complaining when my little real-time chart turns off. I have no question if he can do it like that for 50 years, then I'll be able to pull it off with this.
That's very cool. Well, I'm sure you're an inspiration to diabetics everywhere. You must be in contact with a lot of diabetic friends.
I really like getting email from diabetic programmers.
Right. I bet you do.
It's like a little club, you know.
Sure.
You know, you're a geek, you're programming .NET, and you're a diabetic. And we're always conspiring to write like the next great diabetes management application. Because one of the things that's funny about diabetics is that we're all interested in solving this in Excel. You know, whatever it is, there's got to be a chart that can make it happen for me.
Yeah.
One diabetic has got like, you know, he's got like a web service and an online site where he's got his blood sugar automatically uploaded just so the world can see it. And he was using that as a way to motivate himself. Like, well, if the whole world can see my blood sugar, then I'll be more likely to be in control.
You turn that data into art somehow, right? With music and
color
and sound.
There are so many ways to express this data. And like in this example, I now get 250 data points every day from this new meter when before I had 10.
Wow.
So one of the interesting things diabetics do is they do what's called a modal day. They basically take their data from a single day and they overlay it with other days. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, every day of the week is overlaid with seven different lines on a single line chart. Mm. So then I can go and say, wow, every day at 2, my blood sugar goes up.
Yeah.
And say, oh, wow, or every night at 3, this happens.
And this is data that you couldn't do before you had this sort of real-time data point thing.
It's like it would be very coarse data, right? I mean, if my blood sugar was 100 at 6 a.m. and 200 at 6 p.m., I could draw you a nice straight line because I have 2 points. But with 200 points, it becomes this subtle curve, and I can start figuring out all the different causal relationships about how particular foods work for me.
Yeah.
How long it takes me for insulin to react. When you get the insulin package, they tell you how, you know, what the curve is and how long it will take for it to work. But now I can actually see that it's personalized to me, right? My doctor can't tell me things now about how it ought to work, because now I know actually how it does work. It's like getting new contacts. I mean, my eyes have been opened. It is truly amazing. Now, it's expensive, though. I ended up having to pay $400 for this part and another $600 out of my pocket for some upgrades and stuff. Hmm. But they're saying that this is so valuable. It's such good information that once they get the production up, they're going to start pressuring the insurance companies to get this out to the regular folks.
And I got to ask you, as a programmer, are there any I/O points on this thing that you can read into applications?
Oh, yeah, this is the coolest. So I've just figured this out by talking to my local rep, but apparently there's a USB port.
Sweet!
And I can download all this data, and there's a website I can upload it to. But you know the first thing I'm going to do is hack into this and figure out how I can get that data off.
Absolutely.
So I'll definitely be doing an article on that.
Absolutely. Scott, if you're listening out there and you say, you know, this really sucks. My eyes are opened and I want to spend a little bit of money on diabetes research to, you know, help Scott stay on the air, you know, in a roundabout way. Where's the best place to spend some money to?
Well, it depends on what country you're in. Certainly support the diabetic organization in the country that you're in. But, last year, from my blog, we raised about $13,000 for diabetes research. And something like 77 cents on the dollar goes right back into diabetic research. The rest goes to overhead and fundraising.
In America, and who's the?
It'd be the ADA, so diabetes.org. Mm-hmm. Now, next year, though, I'm looking to raise. I'm raising my goal here. You know, we pulled together $13,000. I'm looking to do maybe $50,000 next year.
Awesome.
So, if you really want to help, wait till next August when the fundraiser starts. And let's see if we can do some damage.
Scott, this has been a fun show. I mean, it's a serious topic, but, you know, if you're science-minded like we are, I'm sure you found it interesting, and I'm glad we did it.
Well, I do appreciate you letting me have the venue, because even though it's not necessarily .NET, it is interesting. And if you're not interested in diabetes, you can look at it in terms of blood pressure or any of the other, you know, or asthma or whatever kind of metric that you might want to potentially read in and do analysis on. The data does kind of set you free. And in this particular instance, I'm convinced of it.
And just make sure if you ever get any medical equipment that it comes with a friggin' USB port.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, totally. Insist on the USB port for whatever you get.
Pay extra for that. Okay. All right, Scott, thanks a lot. And we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.